The following is a home program on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th Canto, Chapter Number 1, Text Number 15, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari, recorded on January 8th, 2016, in Ontario, Canada.
Om Namo Bhagavate. Te Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Kevalaya bhakcha vasudeva parayana agam dhunvanti krishnaya niharam eva bhaskara. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Only a rare person who has adopted complete unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. He can do this simply by discharging devotional service, just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays. Purport. Actually, it's a very long purport, and we have a limited amount of time. I'm going to read part of the purport, and then we'll discuss, and then we'll see if there's time to finish the purport. In the previous verse, Shukadev Goswami gave the example that the dried leaves of creepers beneath a bamboo tree may be completely burnt to ashes by a fire, although the creepers may sprout again because the root is still in the ground. Similarly, because the root of sinful desire is not destroyed in the heart of a person who is cultivating knowledge but who has no taste for devotional service, there is a possibility that his sinful desires will reappear. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.4, Shreyashritam Bhaktim Vadashyate Vibho Klishyante Kevala Bodha Labdhaye. Speculators undergo great labor to gain a meticulous understanding of the material world by distinguishing between sinful and pious activities, but who are not situated in devotional service are prone to material activities. They may fall down and again become implicated in fruitive activities. If one becomes attached to devotional service, however, his desires for material enjoyment are immediately vanquished, are automatically vanquished, without separate endeavor. Bhakti parishonu bhavavaraktir anyatra cha. If one is advanced in Krishna consciousness, material activities, both sinful and pious, automatically become distasteful to him. This is the taste of Krishna consciousness. Both pious and impious activities are actually due to ignorance, because a living entity is an eternal servant of Krishna, has no need to act for his personal sense gratification. Therefore, as soon as one is reclaimed to the platform of devotional service, he relinquishes his attachment for pious and impious activities and is interested only in what will satisfy Krishna. The process of bhakti, devotional service to Krishna, Vasudeva Parayana, relieves one from the reactions of all activities. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shivishakanvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nivishesha Shunyavadi Pashyanyadesha Tarine. So, here it is very nicely described. Only a rare person who has adopted complete unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. There are different types of transcendentalists. For example, the speculators, these are called the Gyanis. They want to distinguish between matter and spirit. They undergo great endeavors to philosophically detach themselves, neti-neti, from all of the material activities, the material consciousness. This is described in the Brahma Samhita. Pantastakotishatavatsarasampragamyo vayuratapi manasomunipungavanam sopyastiyat prapapachintyavachintyatatvego vindamadipurusham tamaham vajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord. Only the tip of the toe of whose lotus feet is approached by the yogis who aspire after the transcendental and betake themselves to pranayama by drilling the respiration, or by the jnanis who try to find out the non-differentiated Brahman by the process of elimination of the mundane extending over thousands of millions of years. So if you can imagine these jnanis, they want to distinguish the spiritual from the mundane. They go on speculating for thousands and millions of years to do this. And what is the result? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur in his purport describes they only reach the precinct of the lotus feet of the Lord. They don't actually touch the lotus feet of the Lord. So this confirms what we're reading here, that only when you come to complete unalloyed devotional service to Krishna are you free from the reactions, free from the contamination of material existence. So this should encourage us to actually surrender to Krishna. I personally went through a process of philosophical detachment when I was a youngster back in 68 in Denver. I wanted to be spiritually enlightened. I actually was chanting Hare Krishna at the time and offering my food. I hadn't met the devotees yet. So I didn't really know I didn't really understand what devotional service was. But I liked the chanting and I liked prasadam. I liked Krishna's form. I was very attracted to Radha and Krishna's forms. But I was at that time with no devotee association, doing it on my own. I was going through this neti-neti thing. It's not trying to detach myself from all the material things philosophically. And so I said, what kind of career path am I going to have now? I said, well, I can see only one career path. That's to go to India and just become a renunciate in India. That was my only career path. I'm going to give up Western world, hitchhike to New York, get a job on a freighter, and just stay in India forever. Be a sadhu in India. That was my career path I decided for myself. Instead of a corporate job, be a sadhu in India. That was my career path I chose. So I packed up all my belongings. Shipped them back to my parents' house down in Houston for my last visit with mom and dad for Christmas, And but as the days were going by, one night I had a realization. And it was so profound, I wrote it down on a piece of paper. I denied and I denied until I could deny no longer. See, it was cutting up, not this, detached from 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 this, on and on and on. All the things I was attached to, cut, 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 you see. In India, it's called neti-neti philosophy. Not this, not that, not this, not that. So I finally realized I denied and I denied until I could deny no longer. So I've denied everything now. But now I have to deny denial. Is it? You've cut away, you chopped down the whole forest, but now you've got to throw away the hatchet. Is it? Can't be attached to the chopper also. See, these the jnanis, they're attached to the process of philosophical speculation or mental speculation. But to actually come to a liberated path, you've got to throw away that also, you see. So I realized now I have to accept something. What's it going to be? So instead of renouncing the world, what am I going to do? Well, I think I'm supposed to stick around and try to save the world. That was my realization. So how to do that? I had a vision. I'm supposed to be a part of a spiritual revolution for changing the world. Instead of renouncing it, that was my realization. So, but then I felt I was being called to San Francisco. So it's a whole story. I went there, I met the devotees. I went through a whole series of experiences after about 3 years, all the way up from 1969 to 1971. What's that? 2 years, okay. But, 2 years of all kinds of experiences, which will be coming out in my book, the whole detailed story. But I finally realized this is what I was supposed to do. I was supposed to be a devotee of Krishna. Take up Krishna consciousness as my life, as following Prabhupada as my Guru Maharaj. So in this way, you see. So I was trying to follow this kind of speculator path at that point, but I realized that this path of denial of material attachments ultimately has to lead to denying. The denial of material attachments is another material attachment that has to be given up, you see. So our philosophy is not detachment. Our philosophy is attachment. Attached to Krishna. It's like you've asked about your family, you see. We don't, instead of no family, or greater family, expand your family concept. You don't deny your family concept. You keep your family concept, but now they're included in your bigger family. They're still your family, but now you have a bigger family, that's all, you see. Now you've expanded your family concept. That Krishna is the father of all living entities and we're all his children and we have to help our family members to get out of their miserable situation. That's our mission in Krishna consciousness. That's the consciousness of any gentleman. If he sees people that are suffering, he's not callous and he's not indifferent to their suffering. A gentleman means if he sees someone is suffering, he'll do everything he can to help those people out of their suffering. You see? That's a gentleman. So human life means you must become a gentleman. You must be not be callous to the suffering of others. You must come to the platform of understanding what is the ultimate truth. There is God. I'm the servant of God. And true happiness is to serve God. So now I must serve God and I must help others to learn how to become happy by serving God. Some people try to say there is no God. They say, you religious people, you're as much a foolish sentimentalist. I mean, come on, everyone knows this is the days of science, you know. God's not, any scientist knows there's no God. This is the foolishness, you see. But actually, what they call, that so-called science is not science, it's dogma. They are dogmatists. Those who deny God, they are dogmatists. What are they really saying? God means the source of existence. They're saying, those who deny God, they're saying everything came out of nothing. This is what Dr. Stephen Hawking openly states. Everything has come out of nothing. So, Dr. Hawking, with all due respect to you as a learned PhD, but where's the scientific evidence? When Newton deduced the law of gravity, he had so much evidence of so many trees falling from the apple tree. So many apples were falling. He had some proof to back up his theory, you see. Apples fall from the trees. He had some evidence to prove his law of gravity. Where's the evidence, Dr. Hawking, that you can get something out of nothing? Show me one, do one experiment in your laboratory if you can get something out of nothing, you see. Do it. And then maybe we'll consider your atheistic viewpoint. If you can give us one scientific experiment to demonstrate that something can come out of nothing. So even a leading scientist in the world now, he's considered a bit of a Dr. Rupert Sheldrake, a British scientist, he's done all kinds of incredible scientific work. And he says this is dogma. What they call science now, most of it is just pure dogma. He said it's dogma. It's based on blind faith and fanaticism. He happens to be a Christian, but he's not like a Bible beater, you know, beating on the head of the Bible type Christian. But the fact is that existence has a source. The proof is some things don't come out of nothing. Everything we experience, it came out of something. This house came out of something. This planet, everything that we see, it comes from things. When you come to the original source, you see, that is God. So we have a relationship with that source, and we can also, by analysis, we can deduce that source must indeed possess personality, otherwise it cannot produce personalities from itself. Therefore, that original source is not really it, it's a person. There's a person out there who's the source of all existence. And we all have a relationship with that person. We have a dependent relationship with that person. We are part of that supreme person. And as we see within any unit, whether it's a manufactured thing like this MP3 recorder, or it's our human body, or an apple tree, or whatever it may be, the part is, or your body, every part is meant to serve the whole of which it is a part. When you have a complete whole, every part of that whole, complete whole, is meant to serve in its healthy state. Just like your hand is meant to serve the function of the body. If it doesn't properly do that, you go to a doctor to get your hand fixed, you see. The healthy condition of the part is to serve the complete whole. So we can scientifically deduce, philosophically, logically deduce, there is a person who is the source of all existence. And we can scientifically, philosophically deduce, therefore, in our healthy state of consciousness, we will serve that supreme person. And after coming to this philosophical conclusion, if you actually find out how to do that and you actually practice it, which is called bhakti yoga or devotional service, then you actually are ushered or elevated into an elevated state of consciousness beyond anything you ever knew before. It's called spiritual enlightenment or spiritual awakening or Krishna consciousness. You see? You actually awaken to your actual nature as an eternal spiritual being, part of that supreme person. And to the extent that you actually serve that person with love, he actually reveals himself to you. That person is actually everywhere. He's right here in this room. He's in your house. Wherever you go, he is present. He's within every atom. He's between every atom. That supreme person who's the source of all existence has expanded himself as the Paramatma within every atom in all existence. So there's nowhere where that supreme person is not present. We are cheating ourselves from his association by our tendency to try to enjoy separately from him. Cheating ourselves. Foolishly cheating ourselves, denying ourselves of his association. If you had an opportunity to meet God personally, would you say no? Then why are you doing it now? That's the challenge. We're doing it now. We have the opportunity, but we're holding on to this conception that no, I am the center of existence. Foolishly, stubbornly holding on to this conception. No, it's me. I'm the center of existence. You see? Even a little child shows this mentality. The kid comes to the neighbor's house, you know, the kid looks at his toys, he says, "Mine, isn't it? Mine." What do you do looking at? You can look at my toys, but you can't touch them, right? And even as little innocent little children, this mentality shows up. This is called false ego, that I am the center, I am the owner. But what does Krishna say? Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva loka maheshvaram suhridam sarva bhutanam gatva mam shantam richchiti. One who knows me as the supreme enjoyer, the supreme owner, and the supreme friend, he alone can have peace and happiness within his heart. So there's a great turmoil in the world today. Just like we heard the news, even just down in Philadelphia, some policeman was sitting at an intersection. Some man just comes rolling up with a gun, starts shooting at him. He just comes approaches the police car, shot 13 bullets into the police car. Even right, stuck his hand inside the window. Somehow, by God's grace, the policeman was not dead. He was only badly injured. He'll recover. But this is, the whole society is breaking down. Somebody can just walk up in the name of Allah and just start shooting a policeman on the street. You can just imagine where our society is heading right now. Right here in American, right across the border. You can say, well, not in Canada. But, you know, don't hold your breath. The whole society is breaking down. The world society is breaking down because we don't know Krishna as the supreme enjoyer, supreme owner, and supreme friend. So our Krishna consciousness movement now is dedicated to saving the whole world from chaos and delivering all the living entities here who are contaminated by this self-centered conception, this egotistic conception, and bringing them back to the spiritually enlightened position that I, Jivarasvarupa Hoy Krishnera Nichadas, the constitutional position of the living entity, is he's the eternal servant of Krishna. So this is our mission. We want to help you get out of your miserable condition you're in right now. You're miserable right now because you think you're the center. You say, no, I don't, but actually you do. We all do that. We're conditioned to doing this since time immemorial, placing ourselves in the center, or extending it out a little bit, my family members, my community. It's all self-centered. That's called extended self-centeredness. Is it? So we have to really hear from Krishna, the words of Krishna, the words of Krishna spoken in the scriptures, the words of Krishna, the teachings of Krishna given by great devotees like Srila Prabhupada and by those who are strictly following Srila Prabhupada. We have to hear from such personalities. Because by hearing from Krishna and those who are purely presenting his message, we can actually become purified of our mental contamination, the name that keeps us caught up in this false egotistical conception. We can come back to our original position of pure love for the Supreme Person. That's our natural position. Just like a fish, what is his natural position? He's in the water. If by some fluke of nature he's washed ashore and he's flapping on the beach, he's dying without, he can't breathe on the land, the poor creature, is it? So right now we're like fish out of water here in this material world. No matter what you may try to do to be happy here, it will not be successful. You can try to make money, try to become famous, try to have a big family with a big house. I guarantee you, these things will never satisfy you because you are not a creature of this world. You may think you're happy for some time, but it's illusory happiness. It's not real. It's not real. You cannot find happiness in this material world. It is simply a place of misery, Krishna confirms. You say, well, that sounds really depressing. I don't want to hear that. But wait a minute. You need to hear the truth. Because the truth will liberate you from a false sense of happiness which will not really satisfy you. The truth will actually enable you to take up a system for purifying your consciousness, getting back to your original state of consciousness before you even fell into the material existence. You are actually, you may not remember it, but you are one of the eternal associates of God himself and his kingdom. We are all grossly cheating ourselves right now by maintaining our false bodily conception of who we actually are. We're cheating ourselves, grossly cheating ourselves. You are an eternal being. You're one of the eternal associates of the Supreme Person in his spiritual kingdom. So please don't cheat yourself anymore. That's why we wear tilak. So you wear a kanti mala, arsika, dhoti, kurta. We want to remind ourselves of who we actually are, you see. Get free of the false conception of the self. Get back to the real understanding. I'm actually a devotee of Krishna. So let me start remembering who I really am. Let me regularly chant the names of the Lord so I can be my mind can be always absorbed in thoughts of him. Prabhupada guarantees if you do this, you will be happy. Manmanabhavadbhakto majanji mang namaskuru. Mamma vashashi yuk vaivang atmanang matpadayanaha. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Manmana. Bhavadbhakto, become my devotee. Yaji mam, worship me. Namaskaru, offer obeisances to me. If we will follow these simple 4 points that Krishna is giving us in the Gita, then mamme vaishashaya sangshayaha, Prabhupada said, quoting it from a different verse. Then Krishna says, I guarantee, you see, you will come to me. Without a doubt, you see. There is no doubt if you will think of Krishna, you'll worship Krishna, you become Krishna's devotee, if you offer your obeisances to Krishna, there is no doubt that by this process, you'll become completely free of all anxieties. You become completely happy. So we encourage you all to do this. Please take this message very seriously. It's a matter of life or death. Without spiritual life, we are dead. We may have a very nicely decorated house, very nice automobile, very nice position, and a very nice corporation. But if we are not Krishna conscious, we are simply dead. That is a fact. We're dead. Walking dead. So please take this very seriously. We want you not to waste your human form of life running after sense enjoyment. We want you to come back to your original position, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Become liberated from temporality, ignorance, and mere misery. Asat, what is it? Asat, achit, nirananda, our present position. So if there's any questions, I can try to answer them now. And Guru Mata will also, we'll take turns. I'll let you do the first one. I mean, here, pass it to Guru Mataji. Give her half the questions and give me half the questions. Want me to do the first? Huh? Okay. I'll do the first one. How to increase the urgency that I should grow in Krishna consciousness. You're going to grow either way. Which way do you want to grow? Our tendency is to absorb ourselves in something. So if you don't absorb yourself in Krishna consciousness, the only option is to absorb yourself in material consciousness. So you have to intelligently analyze what is the difference. It's like you're on the airplane and you have a choice. Well, I have my MP3 recorder here with some Prabhupada lectures. I can hear some lectures or I can watch the latest movie on the airplane. You see, you can make your choice. I watch the latest movie. I don't want to hear a lecture from Prabhupada. You see, how do I want to grow tonight? And I have a 5-hour flight, and I'm sitting right here. I can punch the button and watch every movie I want. Now, what's am I going to do? You see, which way do I want to grow tonight? You see, it's your choice. It's you sitting there with your own seat. You have the button. You have the MP3 recorder there. You have your the thing in the airline. You can check your choice. What do you want to do? You have to analyze, what is the most beneficial for my true happiness? Watching this movie or listening to a lecture, you see? So you have to decide, well, I watch the movie, there'll probably be some sex scenes in it, and I'll get lusty, and my mind will be disturbed by thoughts of, you know, some naked or half-naked person, and that probably would be so good for my Krishna consciousness. Why don't I listen to Prabhupada's lecture instead of read Bhagavad Gita or something like that? Learn a few verses. Wow, I have 5 hours. I could memorize a few verses tonight that I don't even know yet. Why don't I pick up the Gita and say, what is a verse I've always wanted to learn but never had time to learn it? Now I got 5 hours. I can have that verse down pat by the time I land in Toronto, you see. You see? So when you come off the airplane, you're thinking about that sex scene in that movie or you're You're thinking, man, 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 bhakto, namajimang. What do you want to be thinking about when you get off the airplane? You see what I'm saying? You have to intelligently use your time to see what is going to help me to be truly happy. Don't follow vox populi, because everybody else in the whole plane is watching some stupid Hollywood movie. Doesn't mean you have to do it too. You don't have to be. You don't have to be follow the madmen. You follow the acharyas. We have a tendency to follow somebody. That is our nature. So you follow the acharyas. Don't follow the mudhas. If you follow the fools and the asses, you remain a fool and an ass. You see? You follow the great acharyas, and you become a great spiritual leader who can save the whole world from turmoil. Take that pathway. Why be a slave of mine when you can be a great hero in Lord Chaitanya's movement? You see what I'm saying? Okay, now, Gurumati, your turn.
Sometimes we feel proud in identifying ourselves with ISKCON, similar to others who identify themselves either by nationality, race, etc. What is the difference in this kind of pride? Which pride? In this kind of pride. Well, one is transcendental and one is material. If you feel proud of ISKCON and its practice and you engage in those practices, it's very transcendental. But those who are identifying themselves with nationality, race, they are all material, which is temporary and full of ignorance.
Okay, my turn now.
Is it possible that that someone identifying with ISKCON actually to a soul on a material level?
Huh?
Someone identifying with ISKCON doing so on a material level?
Well, if they're practicing, as I said, the practice of ISKCON, and they feel proud of ISKCON. And even if not practicing, they feel proud of they are doing something transcendental. That ISKCON is great and feel proud of it. It's transcendental. But right. Where I'm just identifying with nationality, I'm American or I'm Indian, it's all on the material bodily platform.
Well, identifying with this movement actually re-identifies with your real identity, and that way it actually is superior.
Yes. It's transcendental.
We're not ashamed of being, I'm Hare Krishna and I'm proud. Right? Here's the pride, but this is all right. Not that I'm puffed up about it, I'm fortunate. I'm very proud of Prabhupada. I'm not ashamed of Prabhupada, I don't want to hide him. I'm very proud of Krishna, I'm very proud of... for myself, I'm very humbly thinking that I'm not much of a devotee, I'm just trying to be a devotee. But I'm very, very proud of our culture. To me, it's the most dear and wonderful thing, this Vaishnava culture. The Hare Krishna movement is the most wonderful thing happening on this planet. It's going to actually, this Hare Krishna movement will save the world, and I'm proud of that. You see, I'm proud of Srila Prabhupada and what he's done. I'm not ashamed of Prabhupada. I'm very proud of him. He should be unlimitedly glorified. So, can you explain what Doma means? D-O-U-M-A. What is it?
Dogma.
Oh, dogma. The G wasn't... Yeah, dogma is like dog. Ruff, ruff, ruff. Ruff, ruff, ruff. What is your philosophy? Ruff, ruff, ruff. Dogma means you just blindly heard to some... Just like this person who shot the policeman in Philadelphia. He's dogmatic. I'm a follower of ISIS. Allah Akbar. See, that's being dogmatic. There's no philosophy behind it. It's just you blindly hold to some fanatical doctrine that his philosophy is all the non-Muslims should be shot dead, that's his dogmatic viewpoint. We have to kill all the non-Muslims. Either become a Muslim or we're going to shoot you. That's dogmatic, you see. Or a dogmatic Christian, that Jesus is the only way.
But they don't understand what is the way of Jesus. Well, we agree that Jesus, the way of Jesus, is the only way. What Jesus taught is indeed the only way. But the trouble is they don't understand what Jesus is actually teaching. They've made their own version of Jesus, you see. It's like one Christian came up to me and said, Jesus told me to tell you that you were going to hell. You see? Well, Jesus told me something different. I'm sorry. He told me that I should submit it to Krishna. It's actually stated right there in the Gita. He says, Father, not my will, but thy will be done. Jesus is teaching surrender to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. I mean, in the Bible. In the Bible, Jesus is teaching surrender to Krishna, full surrender to Krishna in the book of John. Father, not my will, but thy will be done. That's full surrender to Krishna, taught by Lord Jesus Christ. So someone who makes up their own philosophy for some material motive, that becomes dogma, you see. If you get to the original core understanding of what these great acharyas have taught, even Prabhupada said Muhammad was a great acharya, then they actually were preaching pure love of God, but their followers polluted the whole thing with material motives. They dogmatized it. Christ's teachings have been dogmatized. Muhammad's teachings have been dogmatized. Everything's been dogmatized because the people have this lusty, greedy, materialistic consciousness. And they take up these pure teachings and they pervert them for their own selfish ends. That's called dogma. Okay, your turn.
Okay.
All right. All right.
I took dogma as God. Who don't follow God is dog. Reverse of God is dog.
Oh, yeah. That's true. They say there is no God. There's two kinds of people who are dogmatic. One says there is no God, and the other says they are God. I was sitting with a boy at the Sunday Love Feast in Gainesville years ago, and he said, turned to me and said, I am God. And I said, you are dog. I learned that from Prabhupada. You know. You say you're G-O-D, actually you're D-O-G. You see? God spelled backwards is dog. So you're either God-manic or dogmatic. You take your pick, you know. Be dogmatic or God-manic. Yeah, Devi, it's your turn now.
This is a question actually for you. But I'm answering. Hare Krishna, dear Srila Gurudev. Who actually gave Lord Krishna the name Govinda? Lord Indra, Lord Rama, or Mother Surabhi Kamdenu?
Multiple choice.
What is it said?
He's asking a multiple choice question.
Yeah, multiple choice. No, it's not a multiple choice question. She wants to know who gave. Actually, the name Govinda was given by Indra to Lord Krishna. This is a big pastime in this one. When the Vrajavasis did this Govardhan puja and all that, instead of worshipping Indra, Indra became very, very, very angry and he did the torrents of rains and storms, and then Krishna saved all the cows and everybody, cows and all the Vrajavasis on the Golden Hill. Then after that, Indra was ashamed of what he did. So he then he went to Brahmaji. He was very ashamed, and Brahmaji told him that you should go keep Surabhi cow in the front of you and then go, because he cannot go, he was scared. So to be humble, he had to keep Surabhi cow, because Krishna loves cows a lot. He loves cows so much that to cover up his offenses, and so Krishna doesn't get angry seeing the cow in front of him. So he went with the cow in front of him, and cow worshipped Krishna first with the milk, and then Indra did with the Ganges water bathing ceremony and all that. That pacified, seeing the cow in front of Indra, Krishna was very much pacified, and then Indra asked for forgiveness from him, and then he said, you are real Govinda, then you are the Indra of the cows, and I'm not the Indra. Actually, you are the Indra. Go Indra. Go means cows and Indra, and also at the same time Prabhupada explains Govinda means the master of the senses. So it was actually given by Indra Dev. Is that correct, Mahabhagavan? Is that correct?
I don't know.
It's a wonderful pastime, that pastime of after the Govardhan.
Yeah, there is, but Indra confirmed it.
It was really a glorious pastime. Actually, it's a place where Govinda Kund is there, where it happened right at the foot of Govardhan. Every year we go to Govardhan, and we always tell that story. At that spot where the Govardhan Kund, we sit there and we meditate on an amazing, amazing pastime that Indra was defeated by the prowess of Krishna, and he realized that Krishna was actually the supreme. He came there with all the demigods. They brought all this paraphernalia. They brought a special cow, an elephant. They had all kinds of elaborate worship there. And then the demigods left, and the cowboy boys came back, and they saw this paraphernalia laying around for puja, and they did their own worship of Krishna in a more cowherd boy thing, not so formal like the demigods. But Krishna liked that much better; he liked their worship much better than the worship of the demigods. They were all amazed. One of the boys, I think it was Madhu Mangal, had, I forget which one, and he had witnessed. And he told all the coward boys, he described what had happened to the coward boys in a way which was quite amazing. How there was this big person with all these eyes all over his body, and he was worshiping Krishna, and everybody's just amazed to hear about all this. So yeah, it's quite an amazing thing, that whole pastime there at Govardhan. After Indra realized that Krishna was indeed the supreme. So now we go on to the next one. If we have fallen by wanting to be the enjoyer, how are we to understand when Krishna says we should attain his abode, we will never leave his association again? Yes. In other words, if Krishna says one who attains my abode will never fall down, how could I fall down from the spiritual world? But he says he'll never fall down again. A child may foolishly stick his hand in the fire once, but he won't do it twice. He learned his lesson. Once burned, I learned, you see. So a living entity may fall down once, but he's not going to do it again. He asks little Johnny, he burns his hand, or little Amit, he burns his hand. You want to stick your hand in the fire again? No, you see. Once you get burned by falling in this material world and you go back to Krishna Loka, you could do it if you wanted to, but you'll never do it again. Krishna says, Punar Janma Navijate, they never fall down again. That means you can fall once, but you're not going to fall twice. Next question. You have a huge stack. I only got one left.
Well, I'll give it to you. More questions coming. This one is, Hare Krishna Maharaj, is it okay to keep a distance? You can answer.
Yeah. I'm going to answer this one?
Whatever.
Is it okay to keep a distance from a devotee who is having a habit of prajalpa and gossiping, especially when one is getting directly affected by his or her actions mentioned above? Actually, it is described that materialistic devotees should be kept at a distance in the Bhagavatam. But that doesn't necessarily apply to somebody who's in prajalpa. That applies to somebody who's committing Vaishnava parad. If someone's blaspheming, just like our Ritvik friends, they say all the ISKCON gurus are demons. You wouldn't go to hear their lecture, right? They say that only Prabhupada is the guru and nobody else. But that's not what Prabhupada taught us. Prabhupada says right there in his books, the one who is now the disciple, he is the next guru. So these people are preaching against what's in Prabhupada's books, you see. So we don't, naturally, we avoid their association. But if some devotee has a bad habit of, you know, gossiping and talking, you know, sitting there chanting his rounds and he's chatting at the same time, the better that someone train him up, you see. Not just let him go on with his pajalpa talking nonsense. It's better to train him up.
Also, there is another type of prajalpa also. When devotees, after the lecture, they start talking about their work, what they did and how it is going at their workplace and this and that. That is also prajalpa.
Mm.
And if somebody just gets absorbed in that, it's better they remain aloof from that.
Yeah, the thing is, if someone is dropping pajalpa, the best thing... Actually, when I joined the ISKCON temple in Austin in 71 with Vishnujan Swami, there was a rule, no relative topics allowed. That's it. And we were living in the temple and we weren't allowed to talk. We could only talk about Krishna and that's it. Nothing else was allowed. And that was it. There was a rule and the Swami was right there. We were living with him in the same room. We all slept in the same room together. So that was it. You don't talk anything about Krishna and that's it. Okay, and I think there's nothing else to talk about except Krishna, and it was a wonderful atmosphere. Prabhupada told me personally, he said, you have been trained up under the expert guidance of His Holiness Vishnujana Swami, and that's the training we got, to only talk about Krishna and nothing else.
On the same notes, Gurudev, how do you handle a situation where you're stressful from work, and you came back home, and you want to just share, and how...
Well, you can, from a Krishna conscious perspective, then that's okay. You can analyze your day at work. You can talk with your wife from a Krishna conscious perspective. Yeah, I was trying to be Krishna conscious, but it was so hard because all they were cracking all these jokes and talking about this and that. You can, yeah, that's all right. You can talk about work from a Krishna conscious perspective. Then it's all right.
It'll be easier, but except if one is stressed from the job, then look into Bhagavad Gita. And then transcendentalize everything. You don't have a heavier job than what Arjuna had to do. And all your stress will go away. Otherwise you will be absorbed in that topics of job only, and it a whole life your mind will become absorbed in that job work. So as I breathe into from Bhagavad Gita, your stress will go away, you will become Krishna conscious.
See, don't make the job your life.
Job is you are going there just to purpose of maintaining your body.
So that you can cultivate Krishna consciousness. Yat karoshi yadasnasi yasdahosi dadatsiya. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give away, as well as whatever austerities you may perform, like working that job, shall all be done as an offering to Krishna. So you're not doing it as an offering to that corporation. You're doing it as an offering to Krishna. How? By every penny you earn is meant to be used for Krishna, nothing for sense gratification, you see. To maintain a nice, make your home a nice Krishna conscious ashram, grihastha ashram, your income goes for that, and whatever extra you have, that goes for ISKCON preachers, it goes for your temple, etc., for transcendental purposes. So if you spend all that money Krishna consciously, then the work now is service for Krishna. You're doing all of your Krishna consciousness. And you won't be so affected by it. You'll be able to... It's like the lotus leaf exudes a waxy substance, so it doesn't become saturated by water. So you have to exude Krishna consciousness. Have very good japa and nice gravastakam and little morning program before you go to work. And this way, you have nice prasadam. Don't carry your own prasadam. Don't eat their food. Bring your own... We call it brown bagging it in America. You got to brown bag it to work. Even I went to the, when I was the award-winning salesman for MCI Corporation, there was a special dinner for all the superstars. And they invited me to go, and they'd serve us a nice dinner in a hotel, horrible meat dinner, So Mataji packed me, had my own prasadam in the bag. I sat down at the table with all the other award-winning salesmen and put my prasadam, I made my prasadam, So you just have to, you got to stay somewhat aloof from that whole scene. You got to always stay connected with Krishna. And this way, and then you come home, you leave for work in Krishna consciousness and come home in Krishna consciousness. Keep yourself connected with Krishna, you see. Having a Krishna conscious wife is a great asset. That relationship with your wife will actually strengthen you and empower you to keep your Krishna consciousness even when you're there at work, you see. So, in this way, utilize it nicely in Krishna service. Next you can do.
The question is, at the time of death, what type of mood should we have? Your question? Now you have to become Krishna conscious. Mm-hmm. That's what the type of mood you have to be. Very good question. So now you become Krishna conscious, chant your japa, read Bhagavad Gita, hear Krishna katha, read Krishna book, so you can become fully Krishna conscious. And so at that time Krishna says, if you remember me, you will come to me. So if you want to go and be with Krishna, you remember Krishna, so observe yourself in Krishna katha now. Because you do not know when the death can come. So become, right now you start Krishna bhakti, like Prahlad Maharaj. Okay?
Okay. Why Krishna created this miserable world where there's no happiness?
Krishna's point.
Why does the Canadian government have prisons? Because it likes to punish its citizens? It has the Canadian government is some mean, sadistic entity that likes to punish people. So it's built prisons so it's we're going to punish some people. Throw them in the prison and punish them. No. The Canadian government wants all the citizens to be happy, free citizens, but some citizens don't want to cooperate with that, so they're obliged to give them a facility instead of putting them to death. They give them some facility. They can live separately so they don't create havoc in the society. Put them somewhere where they're not going to create havoc, is it? So Krishna is a benevolent father. He wants all his children to be happy. But some are stubborn. Krishna, I don't want to serve you. I want to be Krishna. All right, I'll give you a word where you think you're Krishna. In the material world, you see. That's his kindness. He's given you, you wanted a position, it's not it's like the very good example of Prabhupada. When he was a householder, he had a son. Now, in the old days, they had fans. Actually, in my grandma's house, there used to be a fan like this, too. Nowadays, you have a fan. The little bars are so close, you can't stick, a child can never stick their hand in there. But my grandmother's house, the like this big, you could easily, even an adult could stick their hand in the fan. It used to be the fans were like that. My grandma had a fan like that. So Prabhupada's fan was described as also that way in India years ago. And the child was very fascinated. Seeing that fan, a little child wanted to experiment and touch it. And the child had this uncontrollable urge to want to touch the fan, you see. So Prabhupada and his friend said, here's what you do, Abhay. Abhay Babu, or whatever he called him. You turn down the speed very slow and let him do it. Turn it very low speed and let him do it. Instead of cutting his finger. So the child did it. He went, ding! Crying, and he'd never do it again, you see. So Krishna has given us facility that we're not spiritually annihilated. It's not that we get a little ping and realize this is a foolish thing, to try to enjoy separately from Krishna. It's an unnatural, foolish position. So and then it's not that we get our hand cut off in the fan. You see, it's not that you're spiritually annihilated and you have to burn forever in hell. It's not like the Christians say. But there's no such thing as eternal damnation. Everyone eventually, Prabhupada explains in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, the destiny of every single living entity is to go back to Godhead. Eventually, every single living entity, even Mr. Nair, will be back in Krishna Loka or the Vaikuntha realms. Everyone is going to, you know who Mr. Nair is? He's the one who blocked our Juhu temple with all kinds of cheating schemes. Prabhupada said, Mr. Nair will not go back to Godhead. But eventually he will also, even Mr. Nair will go back eventually. Long time, but he'll eventually go back. Every living entity will eventually go back. But new ones will be coming in to fill up the prism. It's a constant flow of in and out. But every living entity will eventually go back to Godhead. That's a fact. You could say, well, that means eventually the material world, if every living entity go back, then eventually there'll be no material world, right? No, because there's an infinite number of living entities in the spiritual world. That means there'll always be, for all of eternity, living entities be following the material world. But the great acharyas will be coming again and again and again to say, okay, now here's the key, go back. Here's how to get out of this quagmire and go back. The great acharya has come to this world to deliver the suffering souls. They can't tolerate to see their brothers and sisters in this illusion suffering condition. So they give their lives, birth after birth even sometimes, to save the living entities. It's described that the spiritual master, when he initiates disciples, he takes the commitment that even if I have to take birth after birth to deliver these souls back to Godhead, I'm prepared to do that. So now it's your turn. Yeah. All right.
I just went to one prison here for a book distribution.
Yeah.
In Milton, where I live, and on the entrance they say as a correction center.
Yeah.
And that word strike me. It's like they don't say prison or jail. This is correction center.
Yeah.
It means people go. I mean, they put people in there to get corrected. So I guess we can relate.
That's a very good point. They are actually meant to reform them, not to punish them. They're meant to reform them. This material world is a reformatory or a correctional institution. It's not a punishment institution. That's a good, very good point. Thank you. Yeah? She has a...
Yeah.
All right, now it's Mataji's turn. You can ask Mataji. She'll handle it better than me. All right.
So, the question about the material world also, not that every time more and more living entities are falling down, but we have so much living entities in different grades who can go back, and it takes very, out of thousands and thousands, one can understand Krishna that can go back home. So there are so many coming up to the higher level.
Yeah, I mean, even the microbial germs are there, and they're coming at. There's two ways that we have human beings suffering the material world. One is living in and he's falling from the spiritual world. But also is the coming up from the lower species, the microbial germs, the plants, the worms. They all evolved to the human form. So there's two streams of coming in.
So it's very difficult. Once when we come down into the material world, it's very difficult unless one becomes fixed in Krishna consciousness.
Not only is it difficult, it's absolutely impossible unless one becomes Krishna conscious to get out of the material world. Even the gyanis, the great gyanis and yogis, only approach the precincts of Krishna's lotus feet. They don't actually contact directly the lotus feet of the Lord. Okay, now.
So this is, how can I accomplish to make my children young ones as devotees? I'm having a tough time. Whoever's question is, I would ask them, are they practicing Krishna Bhakti themselves very, very diligently?
Strictly, diligently. You want to make your kids Krishna conscious, you have to be an ideal acharya. That's the point. I'm sorry, I'm just adding a little bit. It's her turn, I'm hogging a little bit.
Are your home yourself and they will follow the example. You don't force them, but give them the opportunity to become Krishna conscious and show them the path. Whose question is
this? This is mine.
So you are practicing Krishna Bhakti yourself. You chant your 16 rounds?
Yeah, not 16.
That's where it begins. You have to follow the acharyas, practice 16 rounds, offer Krishna all the bhoga that you eat, and get initiated and fully take up Krishna consciousness. Then it will be easy. The children will see that you are practicing. That they can do it.
So all the objections and all the criticism of me doing it, whatever stage I'm in, that will be resolved once I get to that stage.
Yeah, that the purity that you develop will be affecting the whole atmosphere. You see, then others can it affects their consciousness, so that will improve their Krishna consciousness.
So the sooner
you do it, the better. Once they grow up to teenage, it will become more difficult.
They're grown up kids.
Yeah. That's the stage. Teenage, you cannot do much. You have to be just friends. You have to take up Krishna consciousness yourself, fully Krishna consciousness, not quasi. If you remain quasi, you cannot affect anybody. As much as you are Krishna conscious, you will help them. So this is the way, and after they are teenagers, they are independent. Prabhupada says when the children are like very young, then you can train them. But when they go to that level of a teenager, you have to be just friends with them. That's how you can do it. If you are friends with them, they may be able to come and inquire you about Krishna consciousness and take up like that.
But right now I'm into the stage, like I've stopped talking about it. I initially used to kind of suggest things, but it has come to a point that they don't like me talking about it, so I'm like...
Yes, it's, even the young, we have seen that parents sometimes they say to the young one, babies, bow down, but they don't bow down themselves, and they are forcing on the children. That does not work.
How old are their children? How old are her children?
Teenagers.
No, my kid, one is 23 and 19, and they're both against. They find me crazy doing all this, you know?
19?
And
23
and 19.
Oh, forget it.
Okay, you can, they are on their own now.
They're adults now. Just try to bring them to the programs, that's all you can do.
Yeah, but first one has to do it oneself also.
Yeah.
Then they will see that how ecstatic you are in Krishna consciousness. Yeah. They'll think there is something here.
Yeah, if you become a full-on devotee, you know, 16-round initiation, you know, empowered preacher of Krishna bhakti, then you can, what does Krishna say? Yad yada tadate shvesta tattare vitarodhya siyat pramanam kurute lokutadhanavartate. Whatever the great man does, or great woman in your case, the whole world will follow that example. So why only your kids? If you become a pure devotee, you can liberate the whole world, according to our scriptures. Why only your kids? You can influence thousands of children all over the world if you become a pure devotee. So you should become a completely pure devotee of Krishna. And then you can liberate thousands of children, your own and thousands of children all over the world from their entanglement in the cycle of birth and death. It's a challenge for you now. You take this father very strictly. Fully embrace this process of surrender to Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Take another, since I butted in, why don't you go ahead and take another one?
What is Ekadashi? Why we do not eat beans and lentils? You want to tell that story? There's a great... In the Shastra it is mentioned that Ekadashi is a very auspicious day which represents Lord Krishna himself. There is no sins on that day. There is no place for sin to live in anywhere. So sin is also a...
She doesn't want photos taken. She's very...
So that... sin personified also. There is a sin personified, so he doesn't have a place to live. And so in the Ekadashi, Krishna has given the sin personified to live in
grains and beans.
Grains and beans and lentils and all that things. So that is the reason. Actually, Ekadashi should be completely fast, no bread, no prasadam at all, without even water. But since we cannot do it every time, so then Prabhupada has suggested that avoid beans, lentils. So we can take, there is called falahar, which you can take fruits and things like that, but no grains and beans, because there is a residence of sin personified in the beans and lentils. All kinds of beans. That means not only beans and lentils, anything coming from that also, like chapati flour and all kinds of things.
Okay.
And then you can answer this. Okay. Why in Islam Christianity kill cow and eat the meat?
Yes. Actually, even in the Vedas, there are, in all these religious systems, they have two levels of practice. Yeah, even in the Vedas, you have a system for killing, what was it, the goat, and offering it to goddess Durga. So all the scriptures have prescriptions for these low-class people to follow certain rules and regulations, to at least try to somehow connect themselves with God. There are prescriptions for those who are materially attached to somehow get them into the process of God consciousness. And then for those who are serious, there's a process of detachment from material sense gratification. So Lord Chaitanya was making this point when he had talked about Islam with Chankazi. So there are prescriptions in all the scriptures for those who are materially attached. The Vedas have such description, the Quran and the Bible. They have rules for those who are materially attached, and for those who are actually serious about spiritual life, they teach detachment in the Vedas, the Bible, and the Quran. Just like in some place in the Bible, it talks about how you can kill the animals and eat the meat. But in other places it says, thou shalt not kill. And that's considered a higher principle, you see. So the concession is given for meat eaters, even in the Vedas, they can kill a goat. But when you actually understand my purpose is to get liberated from this material world, not that I approach God to fulfill my material desires, the real point of all the scriptures, the Bible, the Quran, and the Vedas, is to give up material sense gratification and come to the point of complete surrender to the will of God.
Without spiritual life, we are dead. What is the spiritual life? What is the spiritual life? The spiritual life is that you understand you are not the body. That's why you are not this body, and you are spirit soul, and the spirit soul never dies. The body dies, not the spirit. So when you develop the spiritual life, you are like, instead of polishing the car, you are taking care of the driver also at the same time. So then there is no death. There is no death in the spiritual life. So one has to understand that you are a spirit and your nature is that you are eternal, full of bliss and full of knowledge. One has to come to that level. And that is by taking up Krishna consciousness, where you can understand yourself. Then you have a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you act accordingly. Not only knowing that you are a spirit soul is enough, but you have to engage in that activity what the spirit soul is supposed to be. That is spiritual life. That means the spiritual life, that means that all your actions, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, or whatever you do, instead of on the animal propensity or animal platform, you should be doing on the human platform. Human means you understand yourself and you act accordingly. Otherwise, we are just doing this eating, sleeping, mating, and defending of the material life without knowing why we are doing that is on the animal platform. Everybody has to do that, but the human platform is higher, so we can understand I'm a spirit soul, my relationship with the Supreme Soul, and we act on that platform. Then we are acting in spiritual life. Okay.
Yes. Next question. When a person is living with Krishna consciousness, then a thousand of people discourage you, they do not cooperate with you. How to dis something from such situation? How do you deal with it? That's what I want you to know. Actually, you have to understand that becoming Krishna conscious means declaring war on Maya. You have to be in a mood of a warrior if you want to become Krishna conscious in this Kali Yuga. The whole world society is going to be against you. You have to really step out and not be a follower of the crowd. You have to be a leader of the crowd. You have to be you can't depend on them to encourage you. I mean, you have to just... That's why you have to take shelter of Guru, take shelter of Vaishnavas, because no one else is going to just encourage you to be Krishna conscious. Sometimes they will. Sometimes it happens. I know when I was coming to Krishna consciousness, I had a friend named Mike the Buddhist. And I asked Mike, well, I think I'll go live in the temple. He said, yeah, do that, go live in the temple. So sometimes it happens. He was a karmi, but he thought that living in the ashram was a pretty cool thing, so he encouraged me. Sometimes it'll happen. Sometimes a materialistic person who has some little piety or little intelligence will encourage you to take up Krishna consciousness, but it's very rare, you see. Mostly they'll discourage you. Why? Because misery enjoys company. They want to keep you they enjoy your company. I'm in misery, so we'll all be in misery together. Misery won't be so bad if we can all be commiserate with each other about our misery. For you to actually step out of the misery, then they don't have their misery enjoys company. They won't have you around to be miserable with anymore. They'll become lonely without you there to be miserable along with them. But that the best thing is you become happy, and then you can give them genuine happiness. Why the stay with them to pacify them in their so-called happiness, which is nothing but misery, is less intelligent. The point is, you have to be compassionate. If you really care about other people, and you're not being selfish, then you'll become Krishna conscious. You see, because now you can really do something to help these fools and rascals out of the cycle of birth and death. So you have to have proper understanding. You have to hear from bona fide spiritual master. I mean, Prabhupada's wife didn't encourage him. You know the story. Everyone's heard the story. Most of you have heard the story. She was really addicted to drinking tea, which is against our principles. Caffeine tea, you know, caffeinated tea, you know. Prabhupada said, okay, tea or me. She said, well, if it's twice of tea or me, I have to give up my husband. That's just what she told him. So Prabhupada took her up on that. He took sannyas. But she was well cared for. There was many sons. It wasn't she was abandoned. The sons were grown up by that time, and they took all. They were moneyed men at that time. So the wife was cared for. She wasn't just thrown out in the street. She was cared for properly by the sons. And then later on, Prabhupada set up when ISKCON was there, he set up a maintenance fund for his family members. ISKCON was giving them, not. Of course, one of them fought in the courts to get all the money of ISKCON, and then Prabhupada left. I'm the inheritor of my spiritual, my father's money. He wanted to take all of ISKCON's wealth as his personal wealth, and Prabhupada left. But the court didn't go with him on that. He fought in the court to try to take all of ISKCON's property as his personal property. But Prabhupada did set up for the rest of their lives, set up a fund for their maintenance. But anyway, you've been trying to please non-devotees for millions of lifetimes, and where did it get you? It got you in another material body. So you have to finally say, okay, one life is just going to be to please Guru and Krishna. You know, I've spent so many lives trying to please my family, my friends and family, and where did it get me? Another material body. So this, let me make an experiment at least. For one lifetime, I'm just going to devote myself fully to Guru and Krishna and see what the result is. And if I'm not satisfied, I can go back to serving my friends and family in my next life, you see. We encourage you, just try one life, just Guru and Krishna, that's it. Guru, Krishna, and Vaishnavas for one lifetime. Make this experiment. And if you don't like it, if you're not satisfied with what you get at the end when you leave your body, you can come back again and serve friends and family again as many lifetimes as you like. But just, you've served friends and family for millions of lifetimes, and it's kept you locked up in the cycle of birth and death, where you have to suffer birth, death, old age, and disease again and again and again as a human, as a dog, as a cat, as a monkey, as a rat, as a snake, as a turtle, as a tree, as a blade of grass. You've suffered millions and billions of lifetimes. Why don't you, flying with a flock of birds, that was your family, swimming with a school of fish, that was your family. Why don't you try for one lifetime, Guru, Krishna, and Vaishnavas, and that's it. Just make the experiment. Krishna's not going to force you back to Godhead if you're not happy with Guru, Krishna, and Vaishnavas. But just try it and see what the result is, and see if you don't like it better than society, friendship, and love in the material world. Your turn. And I'm running out of questions now. So that means we're ending soon.
If everyone is part of Krishna, then why sufferings are in different degree in all humans? This person's own karma has anything to do with human suffering? Why we think only human? There are so many species, and all these living entities are part and parcel of Krishna. And due to their according to their karma, they are all either enjoying or suffering in this material world. Do you think that cats and dogs and animals and trees are not? But the human form of life is responsible for getting into all the different species also. Not only human. At least in the human form you are realizing that you are suffering. But other species are there too. They are suffering but they do not realize. So that's why human form, when you come to suffering level and you understand that you are suffering, then you have come to the human level. Now you must understand how to get out of it. That is better than to see why you are suffering. Human form of life. When we come to human form of life, whatever karma we do, we're going to either get a human birth or we're going to get an animal body or a tree body, depending on the degree of karma that you perform, what sort of karma you have performed. And that's how body you are going to get it, and that's how you're going to act. By Krishna's mercy and fortunate situation that we have gotten the human form of life, so we can change the karma. Don't remain in this karma that we are going through. This is the opportunity. It says that Atato Brahma Jigyasa, now it is your chance that you become self-realized and get out of this circle of karma. And this is the whole Bhagavad Gita, message of the whole Bhagavad Gita. Get out of this karma cycle. Birth, death, old age and disease. Don't remain in this material world. But otherwise, not only in the form of human being we suffer, but depending on our karma, we will go down to even to the animal kingdom, or lower than animal, the plant kingdom, or lower than that, aquatic, or be a roach. If you two remain too attached to the family members, you may come back as a dog in the family rather than human. So,
family dog. Give me the family dog.
There's a family dog or the roach in the family. So, take this human birth very seriously, do not see that the sufferings are minimized in the human form of life, at least so that you can understand that your own relation, who you are and who is, what is your relationship and how you can get out of these sufferings.
I have another one came in now. Why do people kill animals such as cows and animals that produce milk and cheese and other milk products, but they don't kill animals like dogs and cats that produce nothing? Well, the dogs and cats do produce... Oh, wait a minute. The dogs and cats do produce something. They pass stool, you know. They have a law here, the super-duper pooper-scooper law, isn't it? You have to pick up your dog poop. You can't. If your dog poops on the street, you have to pick it up and carry it home nicely in your little baggie. You know? I'm carrying my dog poop home in my hand, you know. This, my wonderful little doggie is passing the stool, and I'm carrying it home for him. So Prabhupada actually says how you can, what was he said, you from dog stool you can get diphtheria, you see. You can catch disease. Here the animal that produces things that can make you diseased is being protected, and they're slaughtering the animal that gives milk, cheese, yogurt, ice cream, you know, so many things we get from milk. It just tells you how absolutely insane the modern day society is. Absolutely insane. Asinine mentality these people have. They're so much blinded and misguided by demonic consciousness. So we have a very, very great war. We have propaganda war. We have to fight somehow, get these people to stop killing the cows. I mean, it's unbelievable. Even in India it's going on. It's a horrible thing, this cow killing.
People do this great sinful activity and then they have to suffer, then we are asking why we have to suffer.
Well, they become cows in their next lives, and the people who kill cows, and who eat the meat of slaughtered cows, like all the people who line up at McDonald's, they're going to become cows and slaughtered. They'll be in McDonald's the next life also. They'll be hamburger meat in the next life, you see.
They're getting reactions even in this lifetime.
Yeah.
People come and shoot with a gun.
Yeah, what was... Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's like... it's a fact. There's like this man, the policeman was shot, he was probably a meat eater, you know, most likely a meat eater. So yeah, we're getting... It's a very heavy reaction. I'm honestly amazed that the society is still as together as it is right now, in spite of all of the sin that's going on. The airplanes are flying on time. You know, the TV stations, the radio stations are all going on a regular basis. Society is going on, and the governments are meeting in regular order. The mail is being delivered every day. The electricity is still working. It's only due to past pious activities that we have some semblance of a civilization still going on right now. But I guarantee you, if this sinfulness continues to go on, the whole thing will break apart. It's predicted in the Bhagavatam that it'll become mere anarchy. The whole planet will become cannibals. Imagine being a cannibal living in the jungle. That's what Toronto will be like eventually. A bunch of cannibals eating each other. That's where the whole modern day civilization is heading. And the only thing that can hold it off is this movement. The good news is that it's predicted there's a 10,000 year period which started 500 years ago with the advent of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, during which this movement will actually take over the whole world. Ki Jai! It's Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami has predicted Saj Janna Durjanna Pangu Jadda Anagana Prema Vanyaya Dubaila Jagateda Janna. This Krishna consciousness movement is a prema tsunami, a tidal wave of love of God. It will inundate the entire world and drown everyone, whether they're pious, impious, lame, invalid, or blind. Everyone will become inundated with this flood of the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So just as the phone is ringing, Lord Chaitanya is also ringing to all of us to wake up. Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago, Gaura Chandra Bole.
Wake up, you sleeping souls, you see. There is going to be a powerful spiritual revolution which is going to manifest. We don't know how soon it will take. It's, the seeds are there. Prabhupada planted the seeds. Lord Chaitanya planted the seeds within India. And Prabhupada spread those seeds all over the world. And we don't know how long it'll take before it fully fructifies. But we're right now at the beginning of the most exciting, in the beginning of the most beginning days of the most exciting paradigm shift in the history of the universe, when this whole world is going to become Krishnized. So you want to live an exciting life, just dedicate yourself to live on the cutting edge of this spiritual revolution, which is going to completely turn world history, or put world history right side up again. Caliph or Sringi's curse flipped it upside down 5,000 years ago. The curse of Sringi put us into an inverted culture which is based on matter instead of spirit. Lord Chaitanya has now flipped it back over again, based on spirit instead of matter, and it's taking a while because it went on for 4,500 years before the advent of Lord Chaitanya. We have 4,500 years of culturing of the world consciousness, which now has to be reversed. We have to reverse engineer the global consciousness by Harinam Sankirtan, book distribution, prasadam distribution, cultivation of individuals with great love and care. We have to reverse engineer the global consciousness. This is our mission. So please get your consciousness reverse engineered back to its original position and dedicate yourself to reverse engineering the global consciousness. The key is, don't wait to become a pure devotee to fully realize Krishna before you start preaching. Whatever you know now about Krishna, tell it to the world, and then Krishna will, when he sees Krishna sees you're broadcasting whatever you realize about him to the suffering souls of this world, you know what Krishna's going to do? He's going to give you more realizations. Whatever I've given you, you're sharing it liberally with the world, okay, I'm going to give you more realization. You share that, all right, I'm going to give you more realization. Krishna reciprocates with you according to the degree of how much you're willing to share him with the world. He will share with himself with you to the extent that you share him with the world. Try to understand the importance of Lord Chaitanya's order that you have to be a preacher. You will only realize Krishna to the extent that you're willing to share your realizations with the world. This is a very important thing. You have to be a preacher. In this age, to realize Krishna, you have to be a preacher. You have to be one who shares Krishna, who cares about others, who wants to give them Krishna. So in this way, you can live in a state of transcendental bliss your whole life. Just be in this move of giving Krishna, giving Krishna, giving Krishna. And such a person will be very eager to hear from senior devotees, to become more and more qualified to give Krishna to the suffering people of the world. So... All right, last question.
All right. Are the ghosts also an entity created by Krishna? What is the purpose? All the living entities are created, are the emanations of Krishna, they are part and parcel. But if one has a ghostly ghost form, that means they have abused their precious body, they get it. According to one's karma, one gets the different types of bodies. So this entity who has got the ghostly nobody, that means they have created such a sinful activity that lost their body. Even. They don't even have, they are trying to enjoy without the body. So it's all depending on the sinful activities of the people. All kinds of bodies are like apartments, whatever they can afford.
Yeah, my question here is, like, if somebody is a devotee, isn't that person protected from such entities?
Because yes, they are protected. Just like in London, when the devotees were living in John Lennon's place, there was a ghost in that building, and there were people who were living there, they were finding it very scary and all that. That ghosts will even lift their bodies and all that. So one day they told Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, go and do the kirtan. If they do the kirtan and they take up Krishna consciousness, the ghost will go away. We have done these practices many places. People who are scared with the ghost and they're harassed by the ghostly elements, the devotees go and do the kirtans. Loud kirtan, yeah, many devotees.
Bradley Farah, loud kirtan just drives them right out.
And they drive them away. They will either get liberated or they get a better body.
Can I squeeze in one more? Is it okay?
There is one more.
All right, well, no more new questions. You do one more and I'll do one more. This is the last. Do you have one more?
This is a partially already answered.
Okay, so you don't have any new ones?
No.
All right, no, this is the last one then. Very last one. I have a question. Is it true that the stress level is less if one moves out from the urban area to the rural areas? Well, not if you take your urban consciousness with you. But if you're Krishna conscious, you can be Krishna conscious anywhere. You see, there's three atmospheres. There's the countryside, which is the mode of goodness. There's the city, which is the mode of passion. And then there's the place like the brothel or the liquor house, which is the mode of ignorance, you see. But beyond, transcendental to all of these is a Krishna conscious atmosphere. So if you have a Krishna conscious atmosphere in your home or the temple, then you're better situated than somebody living out in the country. So wherever you are, you make that atmosphere Krishna conscious. According to your necessity, where you need to live to earn your livelihood, you live there, but you make that place Krishna conscious, and then you're transcendental to all the atmospheres of the material world. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Guru Mataji and I both thank you all very much for your coming tonight. And thank you.